Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Per ardua ad astra, Latin for through adversity to the stars. It is the motto of the Royal Air Force and other air force of the Commonwealth. And today I want to talk about a particular kind of adversity for us to get to other stars, and that would be traveling on a generational spaceship. So welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist, Trent Horn. On Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology, but on Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today I want to talk about something from science fiction that people, you know, a lot of things begin as science fiction, but eventually turn into science fact. I mean, there's things in Star Trek, right, that we obviously can't do now. We can't travel to other planets. We don't have a transporter. But the communication devices on Star Trek, you know, basically they're essentially little iPhones, little FaceTime cameras that the crew would have. At least that would have been on the original with Captain Kirk, with Shatner. We have that now. So it's interesting to see what science fiction exists today and what is still waiting to exist. But there was an idea for a generational starship that would go all the way back to, I think, Robert Goddard. It's part of the Goddard Research Center. Rocket pioneer Robert Goddard. He spoke about this in an article or book called The Ultimate Migration that was written back in 1918. And so the idea is that, you know, space is big, right? You, if you want to try to get anywhere, it's huge distances to traverse, even if you're going really fast. I mean, the nearest star to our star, that'd be, what is it, Proxima Centauri, Alpha Centauri system, that's 4 light years. And you're not going to be able to travel at the speed of light, because if you try to travel at the speed of light, the amount of energy that you would need is also going to increase the closer that you get to the speed of light. So if you manage to travel at the speed of light, you know, you're going to have to use infinite amounts of energy to be able to traverse. You're going to have all kinds of problems with relativity. Nothing is going to be going that fast. So let's suppose you can at least make it 10% light speed. Well, even at 10% light speed, to get to the nearest star to our own, that would take 40 years of space travel. So the idea is that, what if you had a ship that was sort of an interstellar ark? And the goal of the ship was that it would hum its way along and generations would pass aboard this ship. And let's say you're going 10, 20% of light speed on the ship, and you could maybe reach other habitable planets. It would just take you about 100 years. So there's people who would be on the ship who would never see the destination. And there might be other people who will spend their entire lives aboard the ship and never see the destination. But the goal will be for the last generation to make it to the new planet, to colonize it, to inhabit it. And that's what I'm talking about today. I think it's a really fascinating idea. And what got me thinking about it was I was on a flight back from a recent speaking event, and I was just exhausted. I had been writing, I had been studying, and I thought, you know what? I'm done. My brain is cooked. I want to turn my brain off and watch something dumb. So I scrolled to the movies, and I got the film Passengers. It's a 2016 film. It's a sci-fi romance film, but really, it should have been a horror film. It was a totally botched execution. And what's funny is I know the entire plot of the film, but I still thought about watching it because I enjoyed the actors who were in it. It's Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. Like, Chris Pratt, man, he's in everything. It's me, Mario. Like, that guy, I remember when he was Chubby Andy on Parks and Rec. Look at Andy go now. He's a mega Hollywood star. Good for him. So anyways, the plot of the film is that they are on this ship. It's an interstellar spacecraft carrying 5,000 people aboard, and it's traveling to a colony that is 60 light years away from the Earth, and all the passengers on board are put into induced hibernation. The whole trip's supposed to take, I think, like 120 years. And so they're supposed to stay in hibernation. It really is supposed to be cryogenic suspension, but a kind of hibernation so you don't age. And you're just kept in a kind of stasis until the ship arrives. But then there is an asteroid collision with the ship, and there's a malfunction, and Chris Pratt's pod malfunctions. And he wakes up 30 years into the journey, and he realizes that he still has 90 years left. He can't get his pod working again. He can't contact anybody on Earth from the company to help him. All the crew are in hibernation and he can't wake them up. They're in a secure area of the ship. Now, I actually love this scene where he sends a message. He's like, okay, I'm going to send a message to the company that runs this ship. And he sends a message and it says, your response will be received in 50 years, because he's already 30 light years away from the Earth. And so if the message is sent back, The message itself can't go faster than the speed of light. So he's basically on his own. So he's on this ship and he only has one companion, a robotic bartender named Arthur. And he even thinks at one point of trying to kill himself, but he can't bring himself to do it. He finds another passenger, Jennifer Lawrence. He falls in love with her, reads like her novel, or not her novel. He reads like watches videos about her. And he then purposely wakes her up, hides it from her. She finds out later. She's mad for 5 seconds. And then there's a big disaster afflicting the ship and they have to save the whole ship. And it's supposed to be like this sci-fi romance. It's pretty dark what he does, right? I mean, he opens her pod. He basically, in the movie, she says he basically murders her. And he does do that, right? He consigns her to be trapped on this ship for the rest of her life with just him. So it's pretty dark. And the idea is that, oh, well, we'll just smooth ride over that. And it turns out I love you. And a lot of people are put off by that. What's interesting is you could have fixed the movie very easily and turned it into a kind of horror film very easily. So the way the movie, the three acts, act one, Chris Pratt wakes up, doesn't know what to do. Act two, he wakes up, Jennifer Lawrence. And then at the end of that, she discovers what he did. Act three, they try to save the ship. Okay. So you just switch act one and act two, where the movie opens not from Chris Pratt's perspective of him being woken up, but from Jennifer Lawrence. She wakes up and is like, what's going on? And he's shifty and suspicious. And then eventually she finds out he woke her up. It becomes a cat and mouse psychological thriller horror movie. She kills him by jettisoning him out of the airlock. And at the end, during the credits, she starts to go crazy from being alone and contemplates waking up another male passenger. Wouldn't have been as popular a movie, but artistically would have been better. But that shows you when you do these generational ships, you got to deal with, it's not just technological problems you'd have to overcome, it's human psychology. And right off the bat, Passengers is an interesting film. So it tries to keep things somewhat realistic. It uses centrifugal gravity to create artificial gravity, because if you had a ship traveling for 100 years, you'd have to create some kind of artificial gravity, or else the humans, they're just not going to be healthy by the time they get there. I mean, astronauts who spend time, extended time in space, they have to exercise constantly when they're on the International Space Station. And even when they're not doing that, their health is still negatively affected from being in a zero gravity environment. So if you wanted to have an ark with 5,000 people on it and have them be somewhat normal by the time after 100 years they reach their destination, you'd have to come up with some kind of artificial gravity. So one of them, the classic one in space, is centrifugal force. The idea you have a circular or a disc and it spins, and the spinning of the disc pushes everything out and creates a kind of artificial gravity, and you'd walk on the inside of like a giant donut or something like that. Something that would be more effective but be very fuel heavy would be if you just used accelerated propulsion. And just like when you sit on an airplane at takeoff, right, you feel the G-force with the accelerated propulsion. If you did that on a generational ship, you could create kind of more evenly distributed and easier to deal with artificial gravity. The problem is you're going to be burning way, way more fuel. And that's already a problem you're going to have there, right? Where do you get enough fuel for this kind of a journey to go 100 years in space? You can't carry it all with you. From the very beginning, your ship would just be absolutely monstrous. It's not going to work. There have been different theories. One would be using solar sails. So it's kind of like how when people went on journeys across the Atlantic or the Pacific during the age of exploration, the wind takes you along the way, right? And you have the sails. If you have solar sails, you maybe could use solar winds to be able to carry you. Others, a kind of a ramjet engine. I don't remember the name of it, but it basically scoops up hydrogen atoms and converts that into fuel. You could also use that to make water and other elements you would need on the ship. Getting enough hydrogen, though, making sure you always have enough of it when you're traversing through deep space, that would also be problematic. But another technical, the biggest technical problem, along just like the fuel that's involved and sustaining the artificial gravity so that you're normal. The other big technical problem is just creating a closed ecosystem that can last 100 years in space, because you have to have something where you can exchange the oxygen, the carbon dioxide, the soil remains healthy for the plants that you grow, that you're able to produce enough food inside this closed system. And we've tried to do that on Earth, and it's really, really difficult. Probably the most famous example of that is Biosphere 2. It was constructed in the late 80s, and it's this huge center. It's about 20,000 square feet, and it's a big glass dome, a bunch of different domes. It looks like a big greenhouse, sort of. It's in southern Arizona, just outside Tucson, and it's got all kinds of different biological habitats within it, and it's closed off from the outside world, or at least it was when they were doing experiments. There's a rainforest, ocean with a coral reef, grassland, a fog desert, different areas to farm. Uses passive solar input through the glass frame to provide energy to, you know, to grow the plants and to heat things. It was used as a closed system experiment one time between 1991 and 1993, and then for a few months again in 1994. But in both cases, you had like, I don't know, it was like six or seven scientists were put inside of it, and they were supposed to last there and try to sustain their own ecosystem. And it was very, very difficult. They were chronically hungry. Even if they had enough nutrients to get by, they still reported low morale. I think the second time around, they actually raided the seed supplies just to eat seeds that were more nutrient dense. And they're worried they wouldn't have enough food. And there was talk about smuggling food into them. And people said that would violate the rigor of the experiment. It was a big failure. And so now it's rented out for school groups and other groups to be able to tour. I think you can still go see it in Southern Arizona, Biosphere 2. It's also featured in the film Biodome, one of the worst comedies of all time, featuring Pauly Shore, the weasel. And yes, I have seen Biodome. I have wasted my time on all kinds of bad movies throughout my life. So that would be the other technical problem, is if it's hard enough for us to create a closed ecosystem for 2 years at Biosphere, knowing that you can terminate the project anytime if things start getting out of hand, and it's a huge facility, and you also have the benefit of a ton of energy coming through from the sun, from our own star, trying to replicate that on a generational ship will be very difficult. But just as daunting, though, would probably be the psychological challenges. Having human beings confined together for extended periods, we tend to go a bit nutty. The best experiments that we've done to see what people get like under these situations tend to be in Antarctic research stations. That would probably be the best one to figure out, okay, what would it be like on an intergenerational ship for people? Well, watch how people get in Antarctica. They have these research stations that usually clear out by winter. So there's a skeleton crew that runs it during the winter. It's dark, it's cold, you really can't go outside very much. And so you're inside this concrete bunker for months on end with other people. You start to lose track of time. Your cognitive abilities begin to take a hit. You have a hard time thinking through and engaging in problem solving. You get depressed, irritable, moody. It gets very difficult. And that's only for just a few months. Being able to extrapolate that for years, decades on end, you're stuck with other people going on this trip. That's going to be a daunting challenge to overcome, especially, and this is where the ethical issue really props up, because there's going, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, you're going to have people, probably you'll go through like three generations. The idea is that you would have everyone on the ship, you'd have some kind of, almost you'd have to assign things maybe for marriages, or especially for future generations, who's going to marry, who's going to propagate and reproduce. You'd want people to wait probably until their early 30s to reproduce in order to extend the lifespan of everyone on board. But that goes into a problem, because the longer you wait to reproduce, the more likely you could have birth defects, you could have trouble conceiving. But there's going to be people, the second generation is very difficult ethically wise. The first generation, they knew what they were signing up for, and they go on the ship and they do it, right? Even though they know they're never going to get there, they freely chose this. The third generation, and ideally these ships, like a 100-year ship, the third generation, at the very least, they're going to reach this new planet. They're going to have a regular life on a planet. The second generation, that's a bit of an ethical quandary. You're going to have people who are born on this starship knowing they're going to spend their entire lives on this ship, and they're going to die there, and their purpose is just to exist for a future generation. Is that ethical? Well, one thing to think about is that, you know, are they really going to miss life on Earth because the ship would have been all they would have ever known? And I think yes. I think that we have a natural, innate proclivities that God gave us, whether he gave it to us supernaturally, part of our human nature, or obviously came to us through human evolution. We have evolutionary desires to seek out sunlight, fresh air. There's things that we yearn to do as human beings, and we'd be very stunted, I think, spending our entire life, spending, you know, 60, 70 years just inside of a little spacecraft. I think people could adapt, but I don't know. I don't like the idea of bringing children into that when there isn't a compelling reason. Now, if the Earth is going to be destroyed and you have to go to another planet, well, you know, sorry, that's just how it's going to go, right? There's a proportionate good there. But if it's just for exploration, I'm hesitant about that. And who knows if it's going to work? Another interesting science fiction film that deals with generational starships is Voyagers. It was starring Colin Farrell and like a bunch of young adults. Like, I think they're in their 20s. They're supposed to play teenagers, I guess. It's a 2021 science fiction film. And it's about a 90-year flight to a new planet. And these young people are on the ship and they're there. And they're like these teenagers and they're supposed to run the ship. And then, you know, they're going to have the next generation who's going to take over after them. After the adult dies, who is kind of their chaperone, they're supposed to run the ship. And one of the things that was done to them is they take these pills to inhibit their aggression, their testosterone, their natural sex drives, to make them more docile for the journey. And then when they stop taking those pills, it basically turns into Lord of the Flies in space. And so it's an interesting film for sure to show what would happen in this kind of situation, especially if you have, now that one, you just have a young generation with basically without an older generation to lead them versus the multi-generational starship where you'd have an older generation that passes on and then the new generation that takes over. The next generation, Star Trek, Next Generation, make it so. T, Earl Grey, hot. Well, that was interesting. I hope you enjoyed just that little chat about science fiction. As I said before, the two films, I mean, they're not great, but you want to check them out. Voyagers and Passengers. Passengers is not very good, but if you want empty popcorn stuff and you enjoy Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, you'll probably like it. And if you want really to be a glutton for punishment, Biodome with Pauly Shore. So thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.